This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year 2004, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2004. We look at the case for putting Rick James into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, plus our Spotlight Hall of Fame is the ARIA Hall of Fame in Melbourne, Australia. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. This particular episode was put together because of a couple of connections. The connection between the first person and a member of the last group is the date April 21st, of which this podcast will drop literally 3 days before that date. The connection between the first and second person of this episode is because of a tour. So, with all that said, let's get into it. The year was 2004. In music, the only things people could talk about were Britney Spears marrying and divorcing her childhood friend, Jason Allen Alexander, all in 3 days, and then later in the year marrying her dancer husband, Kevin Federline. Also, Ashley Simpson lip-syncing her performance on Saturday Night Live, and also the Super Bowl wardrobe malfunction event with Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson on February 1st of that year. Other events of the year included opera star Luciano Pavarotti performing in his final opera, the Lollapalooza Festival being canceled because not many tickets were sold that year, Elton John starting his Las Vegas residency at Caesar's Palace, the massive Rock in Rio concert festival taking place, Paul Rogers joining Queen for a little while at least, The Killers and Velvet Revolver debuting, as did the Jazz at Lincoln Center performing venue, and the Dave Matthews Band tour bus dumping their raw sewage into the Chicago River, hitting a tour boat that was in the absolute worst place at the absolute worst time. The biggest selling album of 2004 was Usher's Confessions. Other big albums that year were Kenny Chesney's When the Sun Goes Down, Green Day's American Idiot, Norah Jones's Feels Like Home, Avril Lavigne's Under My Skin, U2's How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, Gwen Stefani's Love Angel Music Baby, Anastasia's self-titled album, Maroon 5's Songs About Jane, Evanescence's Fallen, Ashley Simpson's Autobiography, Eminem's Encore, the Jay-Z and Linkin Park collaboration Collision Course, and Tim McGraw's Live Like You Were Dying, along with greatest hits albums from Britney Spears, Shania Twain, Guns N' Roses, and Robbie Williams. The biggest single of 2004 was Usher's Yeah. Other big singles of the year included Ciara's Goodies, Snoop Dogg's Drop It Like It's Hot, Avril Lavigne's My Happy Ending, Alicia Keys' If I Ain't Got You, and also her duet with Usher called My Boo, Jaquan's Tipsy, Mario's I Don't Wanna Know, Fat Joe and Terror Squad's Lean Back, Ashley Simpson's Pieces of Me, and Nina Skies' Move Your Body. In country music, the biggest singles were released by Toby Keith with American Soldier, Tim McGraw with Live Like You Were Dying and also Back When, Keith Urban with Days Go By, Terry Clark with Girls Lie Too, George Straits's I Hate Everything, Montgomery Gentry's If You Ever Stop Loving Me, Phil Vassar's In a Real Love, Rascal Flatts' Mayberry, Lone Star's Mr. Mom, Gary Allen's Nothing On But the Radio, Gretchen Wilson's Redneck Woman, and Alan Jackson's Remember When. The biggest albums of the year were by Keith Urban, Rascal Flatts, Gretchen Wilson, Big and Rich, Jimmy Buffett, Tim McGraw, Alan Jackson, Kenny Chesney, along with greatest hits albums by George Strait and Shania Twain. In hip-hop, Kanye debuted with his debut album, The College Dropout. Some of the biggest albums of the year were released by Eminem, D12, Lloyd Banks, Nelly, Young Buck, The Beastie Boys, Ludacris, and a Tupac posthumous release called Loyal to the Game. The biggest selling one for 2004 actually dropped in 2003. It was Outkast's Speaker Box The Love Below, especially after they won the 2003 Grammy Award for Album of the Year. Some of the biggest singles in hip-hop were Drop It Like It's Hot by Snoop Dogg and Pharrell Williams, of course, Outkast's The Way You Move, Jay-Z's Dirt Off Your Shoulder, and also 99 Problems, Twista and Kanye's Slow Jams, Twista's Overnight Celebrity, Kanye's All Falls Down, along with his songs Jesus Walks and Through the Fire, Nelly and Tim McGraw's Over and Over, Lloyd Banks's On Fire, Fabulous's Breathe, and Lil Wayne's Go DJ. In dance music, DJ and presenter Annie Mack started her legendary career at BBC One Radio. The club play charts were, as usual, dominated by pop and R&B artists back in the day. This time around, the crossover artists included Britney Spears, Duran Duran, Annie Lennox, Elton John, Dido, Madonna, Simply Red, Janet Jackson, Beyoncé, and George Michael. Legit, quote-unquote, dance artists who made the top of the dance charts included Goldfrapp, the legendary Mr. Frankie Knuckles, Curtis Mantronic, Christine W., Junior Jack, Robbie Rivera, The Shapeshifters, Dirty Vegas, along with Eric Prydz's version of Steve Winwood's hit song Valerie. That one was called Call on Me. The top 10 DJs on DJ Mag's Top 100 DJs list were Tiesto, Paul Van Dyke, Armin Van Buuren, Sasha, Ferry Corsten, Hernan Cataño, Christopher Lawrence, John Digweed, Paul Oakenfold, and Deep Dish. In Latin music, Daddy Yankee released the best-selling Latin album of the decade, Barrio Fino. The album helped reggaeton crash headlong into the mainstream that year. The most critically acclaimed Latin artist of the year, though, was Alejandro Sanz. Other big Latin artists of the year included Los Temerarios, Paulina Rubio, Juanes, Grupo Climax, Luis Miguel, Marc Anthony, Los Tigres del Norte, Adan Sanchez, and Intocable. Broadway shows, or revivals of Broadway shows, that opened that year included Assassins, Bombay Dreams, Fiddler on the Roof, The Woman in White, and People Are Wrong. Musical movies included Ray, the biopic about Ray Charles, Beyond the Sea, The Lovely, The Phantom of the Opera, Metallica, Some Kind of Monster, along with animated movies Pixel Perfect and Home on the Range. Bands that formed in 2004 included The Body Rockers, Bring Me the Horizon, Ryan Adams and the Cardinals, Cascada, Camel Fat, Ally and AJ, Digitalism, Fort Minor, Nero, Pompeii, Panic at the Disco, and Paramore. Brian McFadden left the group Westlife, and Clint Lowry left the group Seven Dust. Bands that either broke up or announced their hiatus included All About Eve, The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, No Doubt, Atomic Kitten, Bachman Turner Overdrive, Orbital, Concrete Blonde, Jan and Dean, Jane's Addiction, Sixpence None the Richer, Matchbox 20, Creed, King Crimson, and Yes. Bands that got back together for a little while in 2004 included Destiny's Child, New York Dolls, Megadeth, and Restless Heart. Artists who were born in 2004 included Grace Vanderwaal and Mackenzie Ziegler. Dimebag Daryl of Pantera was shot 3 times in the head and killed while performing on stage by a deranged fan who then went and killed 3 other people before being finally taken down by police. Other artists who passed away in 2004 included Ray Charles, Rick James, Johnny Ramone of the Ramones, singer Laura Branigan, singer Sasha Distel, Izora Armstead of the Weather Girls, Jimmy Hassel of First Edition, Cornelius Bumpus of the Doobie Brothers, entertainer Ann Miller, Peggy DeCastro of the DeCastro Sisters, John McCow of Susie and the Banshees, Jan Berry of Jan and Dean, Nikki Sullivan of Buddy Holly and the Crickets, Felix Haug of Double, Arthur Kane of the New York Dolls, Michael Connor of Pure Prairie League, Bruce Palmer of Buffalo Springfield, Alex Soria of the Nils, rappers Old Dirty Bastard, Billboard, and Mac Dre, bandleader Artie Shaw, DJ John Peel, jazz drummer Elvin Jones, record producer Corthon, and composers Jerry Goldsmith and Elmer Bernstein. in awards for the music of 2004. At the Grammy Awards, it was the year of Ray Charles, who put out an album the same year that he passed away and who also won Album and Record of the Year, while John Mayer won Song of the Year and Best New Artist went to Maroon 5 over Josh Stone and Kanye. At the American Music Awards, Usher and Sheryl Crow were among the big winners. At the Billboard Music Awards, Usher won Artist of the Year. At the MTV Video Music Awards, Outkast won Video of the Year for Hey Ya. Usher won Male Entertainer of the Year, and Ciara won Female Entertainer of the Year at the Soul Train Music Awards. U2, Alicia Keys, Shania Twain, Tim McGraw, Brooks and Dunn, and Usher with Ludacris and Lil Jon won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. At the Eurovision Singing Contest, which was held that year in Istanbul, Turkey, Ruslana from the Ukraine won for the song Wild Dances. Kenny Chesney won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and he also won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. Keane won Best British Album for Hopes and Fears, and Will Young won Best Song for Your Game at the Brit Awards. Billy Talent won Best Album for his self-titled album, while Chaos won Best Song for Crab Bucket, and Avril Lavigne won Artist of the Year at the Juno Awards. Jet won Album of the Year for Get Born, and they also won Single of the Year for Are You Gonna Be My Girl at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Avenue Q won Best Musical, and Assassins won Best Revival of a Musical. The Pulitzer Prize for Music that year went to Paul Moravec for Tempest Fantasy. Musically at the Academy Awards, Finding Neverland won Best Film Score, while a song by Jorge Drexler from the Motorcycle Diaries won Best Song. Franz Ferdinand, by the way, won the Mercury Music Prize for their self-titled album. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held that year on March 15th at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. Rolling Stone magazine editor Jan Wenner got into the Non-Performer Lifetime Achievement Award category. In 2023, he would be bounced out of the Hall of Fame's board after he made sexist comments about female rock and roll musicians during a few interviews. The ceremony itself is perhaps best remembered for Prince's blistering guitar solo on the song While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which was played in honor of George Harrison, who was inducted into the performers category, along with Jackson Brown, The Dells, Traffic, ZZ Top, Bob Seger, and this next artist. Prince Rogers Nelson was born on June 7, 1958, and was a product of musical parents. Prince's nickname was Skipper throughout his childhood because he hated the name Prince. Prince also suffered from epilepsy when he was younger and often had seizures. That disease, though, did not stop Prince from being involved in sports, including playing basketball. He also studied ballet, which definitely helped with his dancing skills in his videos and his performances on stage. Prince's parents divorced when he was 10 years old, and the rest of his childhood was spent bouncing around back and forth between parents and new step-parents, much like children of divorce do these days. Prince also found himself gravitating towards music, having written his first song when he was 7 years old. He was rumored to have learned to play at least 10 instruments pretty well by the time he hit his 20s. By the time he was 19, Prince was signed to a managerial contract, and based on the strength of his demo tape, Prince signed with Warner Brothers Records and then released his first album, For You, on April 7, 1978, just 2 months shy of his 20th birthday. A little over a year later, Prince released his self-titled second album, which had the hit I Wanna Be Your Lover and also Why You Wanna Treat Me So Bad. In 1980, he released the album Dirty Mind, which got him into some trouble with songs like Head. Don't know why he got into trouble for a song named Head. Well, anywho, it also got him an opening spot on Rick James's tour. Hence, connection number one. 1981's album Controversy spawned the hit of the same name. Around this time, Prince started forming side projects like The Time, and Prince's double album, 1999, was released actually in 1982, and it had the top 10 hits 1999, Little Red Corvette, and Delirious. Little Red Corvette was helped by being one of only two songs from black artists that MTV was playing in heavy rotation when the music video came out, the other music video being Michael Jackson's Billie Jean. Still, five albums in 5 years was only the beginning, and Prince was about to become a superstar only 2 years later. After his 1999 album, Prince decided that he wanted to make a movie that was very loosely based on his life. He called the movie Purple Rain. This album was the second album to also credit his band The Revolution, as they did help write some of the songs. Certain songs have a bit of a history to them. Let's Go Crazy is probably the best crafted song about moral ethics ever to be made. That line towards the end about pills, thrills, and daffodils will kill is now pretty ironic, considering the way that Prince passed away. The famous drum machine intro after the organs in the beginning of the song is Prince's go-to drum machine, the Lin LM1. Take Me With You was supposed to be for his side project Apollonia 6, but instead found its way onto the soundtrack. Contrary to popular belief, though, the female voice on the song is not Apollonia, it's not Vanity, his rumored girlfriend at the time, it's not Lisa or Wendy from The Revolution, it's actually singer Jill Jones. Computer Blue was originally supposed to be a 14-minute song, but that got cut back. The original version, I believe, has turned up on the special edition of the soundtrack, which you can get from his website. I believe he still has copies available. Prince played all of the instruments on The Beautiful Ones and Darling Nikki, along with When Doves Cry. For Doves, he was trying to go with a bit of a different sound, so he pulled the bass line out of the song. I Would Die For You, Baby I'm a Star, and Purple Rain were all actually recorded a year before. At a benefit concert for the Minnesota Dance Theater on August 3, 1983 at the now famous First Avenue Club that was in the movie, Prince debuted those three songs as well as his new guitarist Wendy Melvoin. The title track of the album has its own history. According to The Revolution's keyboardist Dr. Fink, Prince wanted to write a song that sounded almost like it could have come from Bob Seger. The band Journey, though, tells a different story. According to them, Prince called them up one day and mentioned that he had written a song that sounded an awful lot like their hit song Faithfully. He wanted their blessing so that, of course, they wouldn't sue him. Not only did they give him their blessing once they heard the song, but they thanked him for asking them, actually, because a lot of bands had been ripping off their sound at that point without even asking them first. And if you actually listen to both Purple Rain and Faithfully back to back, you can hear the similarities in the chord progression. Purple Rain, the album, came out on June 25th, 1984 and spent 32 weeks on the Billboard Albums chart in the top 10, taking the number one spot for 24 straight weeks. Purple Rain made rumpled pirate shirts a fashion trend, along with also being the basis for a famous Seinfeld episode. It also gave Prince an awful lot of awards, including Grammy Awards, a Golden Globe, and even an Academy Award for Best Music Score. It is also considered a classic album and is still considered to be one of the greatest albums ever made. In 1986, after Purple Rain, Prince started work with his group The Revolution on a couple new projects. The group at that point had come off of a run where they put out three albums in 3 years. Purple Rain in 1984, followed by a tour, Around the World in a Day in 1985, and Parade in 1986. Parade was his soundtrack to his movie Under the Cherry Moon, which also starred Kristen Scott Thomas. They were working on a couple of new things at this point. The first was going to be an album called Dream Factory. The second was going to be just Prince by himself doing an alter ego named Camille, which was actually him with his singing sped up and pitched higher. Something happened, though, along the way of doing these albums, and Prince ended up breaking up The Revolution, and then he got a new band. He continued work on his new album, still using a lot of songs that he and the Revolution had worked up. For some of the songs, he reworked the parts so that someone else could sing them. For a few, like the song Housequake, he kept the idea of using his alter ego voice. He had so many songs that he wanted to put out a triple album called Crystal Ball. His record label, Warner Brothers, though, did not like that idea at all. So, everybody compromised, and he decided on putting out a double album instead. The album title was also changed, and it was now called Sign of the Times. The album, Sign of the Times, was released on March 30th, 1987 in England and March 31st in America. It spawned a concert film along with three big hits, Sign of the Times, You Got the Look, which he sang with Sheena Easton, and I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man. The album was a top 20 hit in 14 different countries, including America, where it hit number 6. It was the 47th biggest selling album of 1987. Even though it wasn't a huge seller by superstar standards, it sold just over 1 million copies, but not much more. Probably because it was a double album and thus priced much more than your standard LP record. A lot of critics actually consider it Prince's best work. I'm still partial to Purple Rain. It just holds a bigger part of my heart. Sorry. After the success of Sign of the Times, Prince created new backup groups like the New Power Generation, another movie called Graffiti Bridge, a couple more albums that did pretty well, like Love Sexy, also the soundtrack to Graffiti Bridge, along with the soundtrack to Tim Burton's 1989 Batman movie, which I still think is the best Batman movie of all of them, including The Dark Knight. I will die on that hill saying that. Sorry. Love you, Michael Keaton. Anywho, in the mid-90s, Prince had very public fights with his record company, with him first going by his famous symbol as his name, and then he left his record label, Warner Brothers, altogether and started his own record label. Eventually, he went back to Warner Brothers, but it took quite a while, almost a decade, actually. The 20th century was when Prince was a hit-making machine, and while he still put out albums, they weren't anywhere as popular as his albums pre-2000, we'll say. However, as the new century began, Prince became one of the most respected musicians, along with revered status in the industry as a legend. His 2007 halftime show at the Super Bowl, complete with rain actually coming down while he played the song Purple Rain, is considered the greatest halftime show of all time. During his surprise appearance at the 2015 Grammy Awards to present the Best Album Grammy, he was treated to an extra long standing ovation and cheers. He also had that blistering guitar solo that has gone down in history as one of the greatest live guitar solos ever. One last thing that you may not have realized about Prince was that even though he was a fashion icon, that cane that he stylishly walked around with wasn't there for the look. Prince injured his hip from all that jumping around he used to do on stage. He had surgery to repair his hip and had unfortunately started taking painkillers to deal with the pain. As with a lot of people, of course, he ended up addicted to the pills and put his health in complete jeopardy. On April 15th, 2016, Prince was taken to a hospital in England while on a private flight back home when he became unconscious on that plane he was flying back to Minneapolis. Once he was released, he went home to his mansion, Paisley Park Studios. He spent the next few days going around town, seeing a jazz performance in Minneapolis, among many other things. On April 22, 2016, Prince was supposed to see Dr. Howard Kornfeld, who specialized in painkiller addictions, in order to have a physical exam. On the morning of April 21, 2016, Dr. Kornfeld's son came by Paisley Park in order to give Prince the drug buprenorphine, which aids in opioid addiction withdrawals. By the time the doctor's son had reached the house in the morning, Prince was found unresponsive in his elevator at Paisley Park. It was the doctor's son who made the frantic phone call to emergency authorities at 9:43 a.m. And even though the ambulance got there in less than 10 minutes, they couldn't bring him back because Prince had actually been dead in the elevator for at least 6 hours beforehand. Prince Rogers Nelson was pronounced dead at 10:07 a.m. The official cause of death was an overdose of the painkiller fentanyl, which he was taking to deal with the hip pain. During an investigation into his death, authorities discovered that the fentanyl tablets were disguised as a generic form of the drug hydrocodone. Even though no criminal charges were ever brought concerning the illegal drugs, Prince's death, along with Tom Petty's death from painkillers in 2017, would help to put a very public face on the dangers of painkiller addiction, especially concerning fentanyl and opioids. Prince's ashes are on display in an urn in the atrium of Paisley Park, which is now a museum, along with being a recording studio, and you can actually sign up and buy tickets to go see both his ashes and the rest of his place. In Prince's lifetime, he released 42 studio albums. Of those, 15 hit the top 10, with 4 of those hitting number 1. Prince also released 106 singles. Of those, 19 hit the top 10, with 5 of those hitting number 1. Prince was nominated for 32 Grammy Awards, winning 7, 12 MTV Video Music Awards, winning 4, 2 Golden Globe Awards, winning 1, and that 1 Academy Award, winning it for Purple Rain. In total, Prince was nominated for 163 awards with 32 wins. He ranks number 27 on the Rolling Stone magazine list of greatest artists of all time. Personally, I would probably put him a little bit higher, but that's just me. Prince sold over 150 million albums. He's had albums put into the Library of Congress National Recording Registry, including Purple Rain, and he has been inducted into at least 6 different halls of fame, including the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Presented for induction by Outkast and Alicia Keys, Prince Rogers Nelson, better known as Prince, or Skipper to his childhood friends. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004, and we have put Purple Rain, Sign of the Times, and his greatest hits onto this week's podcast playlist, the link to which is in the show notes for you. Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you that there is now a Music History In Depth podcast where we go more in depth on a few of the events that happened in music history for that particular week. The Music History In Depth podcast drops every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts from, as does our Music History Today podcast, which goes over the daily events in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops daily, including weekends, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to this podcast. We are finished going over this year's nominations for this year's class for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. As of this week, though, it is back to making the case for who should be inducted into the next class in 2025, and we're going to start our campaign by looking at the case for putting the King of Punk Funk himself, Mr. Rick James, into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The younger generation mainly knows Rick from probably two things. The first is probably the Rick James bitch sketch from Dave Chappelle's old TV show, or at least the memes that popped up on social media from it. The second is, of course, from MC Hammer's smash hit single, You Can't Touch This, which Hammer took slash stole from Rick's hit song Super Freak, and then, of course, had to pay him and give him songwriting credit. Still, others may have seen various sketches and stories about Rick's wild behavior, drug addiction, and prison sentence for kidnapping and torturing two different women while high on crack. However, Rick's impact, regardless of all that fun and frivolity, as it were, His impact on soul, pop, and funk music cannot be overlooked. He was a songwriter who helped the careers of artists Tina Marie, The Temptations, The Mary Jane Girls, and even Smokey Robinson. He even got Eddie Murphy a top 10 hit by writing and producing Eddie's song Party All the Time back in the 80s. He also had sexy ballads with his ex-girlfriend Tina Marie like Fire and Desire. For his own career, Rick released 13 different albums. Of those, all but two went top 20 on the Billboard R&B charts, and five of them went top 20 on the Billboard Hot 100 charts. While only a few of his singles were popular on the Billboard Hot 100 charts, on the R&B charts, it's a completely different story. He had 23 top 40 songs. Of those, 13 were in the top 10, and four of those actually went to number one. Along with Super Freak, he had radio classics such as You and I, Give It to Me Baby, Mary Jane, Cold Blooded, which was actually about his love for girlfriend actress Linda Blair, who was the star of the movie The Exorcist. There's a fun fact for you. Here's another fun fact. He started his musical career as a member of the 60s band The Mina Birds with Neil Young. Yes, that Neil Young. When they were both in Canada, Rick was actually trying to escape from the military because he had gone AWOL, but they caught up with him and he ended up having to go back into the military, and that ended the band. Neil Young moved to California and the rest, as they say, is history. As far as Rick's influence went, there is one guy who was extremely influenced by Rick. The guy we spent about 15 minutes talking about just a little while ago, Prince. In fact, Rick had Prince open up for him on tour back in Prince's early days, and Rick ended up accusing Prince of copying his act. Truth be told, Prince actually kind of did, with the long coat, the wild hair, and the mixture of rock and funk. There is your connection between artist number one and artist number two this week. In fact, Rick's nickname was the King of Punk Funk, and if you combine Sly Stone, Billy Idol, and George Clinton, you get Rick James. If you want to get your feet wet with him, then go with his greatest hits album called Reflections. If you want to do a deep dive, then I would go with all his chart-topping albums like Street Songs and Come Get It. As far as whether he should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, well, artists with lesser influence are in. However, that whole prison thing and the reasons for it will probably keep him out, regardless of his influence and musical success. Still, Rick James eventually deserves to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Arts Centre of Melbourne is a performing arts complex in the Melbourne Arts Precinct in Southbank, which is a suburb of Melbourne in Victoria, Australia. The centre was constructed starting in 1973 and completed in 1984 when it fully opened. The centre has a bunch of theatres and galleries and is noted for having not only the usual highbrow concerts and ballets from classical and jazz artists, but also for having roller skating, a circus, and a movie theatre. In the complex lies an exhibit for the ARIA Hall of Fame. ARIA, or Australian Recording Industry Association, is the Australian lobbying group for their music industry. They are the ones who put on the ARIA Music Awards, which is their version of the Grammy Awards. They also induct people into their music halls of fame, simply called the ARIA Hall of Fame. The induction started in 1988 and have been going on ever since, except for 2000 when no one was inducted for whatever reason. The number of annual inductees kind of varies, but for the last few years, only one act per year has been inducted. In 2006, the Hall of Fame inducted the group The Divinyls. The Divinyls were formed in Sydney, Australia in 1980 by lead singer Chrissy Amphlett and guitarist Mark McEntry, who had performed separately in other bands throughout Europe and Australia. The original band lineup was Amphlett on lead vocals, McEntry on guitar, Jeremy Paul on bass, and Richard Harvey on drums. While various other band members came and went with their lineup, Amphlett and McKentry were the two mainstays and also the driving forces behind the band. Legend has it that music journalist Vince Lovegrove gave the group their name after seeing the word divine in a Bible passage and throwing an S at the end of the word. Combining the word with vinyl just seemed like a natural progression from there, I guess. Chrissy's onstage costume was usually a school uniform with fishnet stockings to give her the provocative dirty girl look. With a somewhat raspy voice and with the band's controversial sexual lyrics, she quickly became a sex symbol. She also quickly courted controversy. The band was popular in Australia in the 1980s, starting in 1981 with their song Boys in Town, along with hit songs Science Fiction and Good Die Young. The latter song title would later become ironic, as you'll soon see. The band was the opening act at the US Festival in America in 1983, and their 1985 hit Pleasure and Pain was a minor hit in America, but a major hit in Australia. Their 1990 hit, I Touch Myself, created a lot of controversy and some radio station bans because the song was about masturbation and, well, you know, America. You know how it goes. The band broke up in 1996 after Amphlett and McKentry got into an argument. Christina's problems with drugs and mental health issues definitely did not help matters any. They got back together in 2006, and in 2007 they went out on a small tour and were thinking about doing a new album together. In 2007, though, Amphlett was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and then was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2010. Chrissy Amphlett passed away from complications from breast cancer on April 21st, 2013, at the young age of 53 years old. The good truly die young. And that is your April 21st connection between Prince and Chrissy Amphlett, because Chrissy Amphlett died exactly 3 years earlier to the day that Prince passed away. The Divinyls released 5 studio albums and 6 compilation albums. Of those, 7 hit the top 20 in Australia, with 3 hitting the top 5. In America, only 1991's album Divinyls hit the top 40, topping out at number 15. The Divinyls also released 26 singles. Of those, 10 hit the top 40 in Australia, with 2 of those 10 going top 10. Their 1981 debut single, Boys in Town, which hit number 8, and 1990's I Touch Myself, which hit number 1. In America, only 3 of their songs charted. 1985's Pleasure and Pain hit number 76, I Touch Myself hit number 2, and 1991's Make Out All Right hit number 19. The band that gave Australia and America the songs Pleasure and Pain and I Touch Myself, the Divinyls, inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame in 2006, and we will put their hits onto this week's podcast playlist along with Rick James and Prince's hits. The link, as I've said before, will be in the show notes for you. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.